You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Man, I hope you sailed tonight.
Mark? I sailed?
I maybe hashtag, I don't know.
I sailed.
Yeah, sail.
Like did water sail?
Yeah, did you water sail?
No, I didn't.
How about air sail?
I didn't air sail, I didn't water sail, I didn't gas sail. Well, I might have gas.
Did you go to
I don't know, maybe
sale.
I did gas. What's that?
Did you go to a garage sale?
I didn't go to a garage sale.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe next time we should actually plan for the opening of the show so I can, like, know what I'm supposed to say. I mean, whoosh, that came out of left field.
I try to catch you off guard with every
single
time.
Where did that come from?
Hey, from left field, as you said. Yeah.
It came from left field in a stadium 500 miles away.
Exactly. Hey, that's nice. But you know what's even nicer is it's Sunday night. It's 8 p.m.
It's beautiful outside.
We were at the Chicago Executive Airport.
That's right. At Signature Flight Support, our favorite buddies.
Yeah, absolutely. So that could only mean that I'm Al Waterloo. It's 8 p.m. It's Simple Flight Radio. And you must be Mark.
Mark Heppner, I'm here, yeah.
How about it?
It's good. It's been a good Father's Day. You're, of course,
yeah,
are
happy
too
Father's
young.
Day.
Thank you. I got, I woke up to a little, one of those internet email e-cards, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a Grandfather Day card.
Grandfather Day card.
Yeah, and it was from my granddaughter. Of course, she's too young to even know what Father's Day is, but, thank goodness for Mommy and Daddy because they put her name and her picture on this. So I got up. I'm sure at 12:01 it was delivered last night and was there waiting for me when I first got up this
nice.
Morning.
Nice. So what was your reaction?
It was emotional.
Emotional?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get tears or anything like that, but it's just I've been looking at the picture all day.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That was awesome. He showed it to me earlier, and it's a nice car.
Well, especially since it says, love you, Grandpa. I can't wait to see you next week. Again, she's probably going to cry when she sees me, but her parents at least were nice enough
that's
to put those words
reaction.
In there. Yeah, matter of fact, we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do with our show next week, because Sunday night, I'm with them. I'll let you know.
Wow. Hey, that's it.
Yeah, so we'll have a contest this week, and if you want to be the co-host, oh no, I haven't cleared that with Al. If you live in Chicago and want to be a co-host of the show next week, we'll have a contest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the person that flies here from the furthest away.
Yeah, or sends the most number of tweets.
Right, or the most number of dollars.
Yeah, I like that one. That's even better. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you had a good Father's Day. You had a great, sounds like you had a great,
show?
Card. Yeah, well, yeah, I was going to say show. We are going to have a great show.
We are.
And
I got to fly over 2 hours today.
Excellent.
And I flew yesterday. I got to fly in the Bonanza. We had a little mini flyout. Today I flew in the Piper Dakota.
Uh-huh.
And I flew in the Sky Arrow yesterday introducing somebody to that. So three different airplanes in 2 days. It's not a bad GA weekend.
Not a bad GA weekend at all. Nice. I love it.
Bonanza.
Yeah.
We had a little mini flyout. Today I flew in the Piper Dakota.
Uh-huh.
And
I don't know.
And I flew in the Sky Arrow yesterday introducing somebody.
What did you do?
So three different airplanes in 2 days. It's not a bad GA weekend.
Yeah. I don't know.
What are we doing?
Something's
funny. Wow. I was hearing double there.
Yeah. What? Really.
Yeah.
It was like a delay though. Do you know where that came from?
I was going to say stop. I have no clue.
Well, I pulled this out, but it wasn't this because when I pulled this out, it kept going.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. You should see how red Al is. I think you did something.
I didn't do anything.
Well, I had to. There's
no
way.
I didn't change anything. Yeah, I don't
know. How could it come across?
I don't know. I was going to tell you to stop talking because I thought we just heard that.
Yeah. I'm going to put this in right again. Real quick. 1, 2, 3.
Wow. There's it goes in and out, in and out. Nice. Anyway. Well, whatever. Hey, it's been a great day of flying and all that. So you flew, let's say, you were in the Bonanza this week, you said?
Yesterday, yep.
Yep. Awesome. And all that. I was in a 182.
Oh, I was in a 180 also.
In a 180?
Two. You said you were in a 180 too. All right. That's not my Sunday night chuckle.
Yeah.
That's not my Sunday night chuckle.
Wow. This is embarrassing.
Yeah, we're professionals.
Yeah.
Nobody try this at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we shouldn't even try this here.
Let's start this off on the right foot, though. You know, you have you've got this time honored tradition every Sunday night
Yeah, we call that a THT.
Yes, we do.
Time honored tradition.
Time honored tradition that we all kind of like. Huddle around the campfire.
We cuddle.
We huddle around the campfire.
This is his first day with these teeth, ladies and gentlemen. And
we huddle around the campfire. We listen to you, Grandpa, tell us a story.
Grandpa. Sit around, ladies and boys you always and girls. Tell us,
yeah. This is crazy.
It is crazy.
I don't know why.
Are we talking about Sunday Night Chuckle?
Yes, we are. I'm trying to introduce that, and I'm doing a horrible job at it.
Well, that's
but
all
that's all right, too, right?
Yeah, well, at least you're consistent.
Yes, exactly. So why don't you kick it off?
Well, let's see. What should I do? Should I do one in honor of Father's Day?
Yes, you should.
All right, we'll take a little. This is less pilot and more Father's Day.
All right.
So this guy's in the grocery store. Right?
Uh-huh.
And he's looking around, and a pretty woman was in the grocery store, and she kind of took a look at him, and she smiled and said hello. He's taken aback at this, right?
Yeah.
He can't place her. Finally, he has to say, hey, do I know you? And she says, I think you're the father of one of my kids.
Whoa.
Right? So he's racking his brain, right?
Yeah.
He's racking his brain trying to think of how could that be? And then he remembers the only time that he's been unfaithful.
Whoa.
Right? So he says, wow, are you the stripper from my bachelor party? You tied me down and put me on the pool table and you know what did what with me? And all my buddies were cheering and then you took the whipped cream and
And
he said, wow, that was insane. And she said, no, I think I'm your son's math teacher.
Oh,
that one of my kids.
Wow. Yeah. I like that. These jokes are getting a little edgier every week, and I love it.
Well, good. So that one works?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes. You nailed it.
Well, I try. So at least one thing continues on. We're starting now a restart, like you said, a little bit of a mulligan on the show. So we got the Sunday Night Chuckle right. Let's get right back into it.
Yeah, exactly.
No more weird talking on top of ourselves.
Right. Anyway, hey, I got a quick question for you though. Okay. And this is something that I've been thinking about is, just in our own flying club. I know we talk a lot about flying clubs on the show and our lives do go beyond flying clubs, but, we spend a lot of time in here. But my question is, can a flying club be too social?
It's an interesting question, and maybe because of, this is going to sound interesting, or I don't know if it's going to sound bad or good, but I'm going to say I'm discovering that it can be too social.
Really?
Yeah. And when I say I'm discovering, it's because we're part of a flying club, but we're doing a lot less flying these days. It's summer. It's beautiful. You know, we had, one airplane that went out today of the rentable fleet. I saw owners get in their airplanes and enjoy family.
Right.
The planes didn't fly all that much yesterday. Beautiful day. You know, it was a little rainy in the morning, but it was VFR, especially in the afternoon.
Right.
And so, yet we have such wonderful participation when we have a training event, a breakfast event, a meeting. You know, everyone turns out. So it feels less like a flying club and more like a social club. And I want it to be both. Does that sound crazy?
No, I think that captures the essence of a flying club.
And hence the word flying, right?
Well, yeah, so you have flying and social. So, you know, it sounds like it's almost like it's broken down into two different divisions.
Well, it is. And I have been approached by flight schools that say, hey, you guys do wonderful job on the social. Can we just kind of leverage you and you do the social and we'll do the flying? And we, of course, have said no. We're a not-for-profit and we provide something very, very special for the membership. But it's interesting how that's almost coming to fruition, because I was talking to someone, oh man, we're doing all the training, we're flying all the time, and they don't have any, you know, activities like we do.
Right.
And so it's almost coming to fruition where we're seeing one group do one thing and one group do another. I think we just have to market ourselves, I think, is we have to do more of outreach to get people going on that thing, is my opinion.
Right, totally. No, I think it really needs to be kicked up a notch. But I think a flying club, you know, if the flying side was, let's say, sourced out to another flight school or something like that, it wouldn't be the same.
No.
I think it would be, it almost kind of signal the beginning of the end.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think you gotta decide, are you in, flying clubs provide value.
Right.
And the value they provide is not only in many cases affordable flying, but the camaraderie, the community, and the community could mean social from a breakfast or party type thing, or training, or support when things don't go so well. We've talked about that.
Right.
You get, you know, the attaboys for when you do right, and when things don't go well, let's say on a check ride, that the club is there to encourage you to go back at it. You know, we'll help you get there. You know,
right.
Don't be discouraged. So I think, you know, that's the value prop, and you can't separate those two, the flying and the social.
No, you can't.
And not get to the true value.
Right.
And that's not a commercial for a hardware store, by the way.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't think I would seriously question my membership if a flying club were to go that route. Have a social and, you know, it's kind of hard for a flying, you know, for a business to take over that and manage that side. It would be, you know, and they have their own brand. The flying club has their own brand. How do you merge those two?
I don't think you can. And if the flying club is not for profit and the flight school is for profit, that creates all kinds of interesting intersections that could be opposed 180 degrees to each other in terms of, you know, the values and how, what are your strategies and tactics are. I just don't see how that works. It would be weird.
Like, I, you know, for example, let's say our flying club, we put a simulator on order, didn't we?
Yeah, and they're telling me next week. I mean, we have a sim, but this one will be one of those ones you can actually log and keep current on and all of that. So that's pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. But part of the value behind the flying club is that you end up, we're offering a highly subsidized rate, if not free, you know, for the simulator that costs a lot. And, you know, you look at a business and say, hey, okay, we have that. We need to have people use it. You know, they would probably have to charge. right? You know, if they had, so that's one of the nice perks about a flying club is that you have this equipment or, and things like that. You could do things that without a business or a profit margin in mind that, and you can really provide.
Yeah. The idea of charging, you know, I'm in the world of, sales and all, and you know, we don't like to give things away because that basically states there is no value.
Right.
Right. Everyone thinks that, oh, you can give things away and get customers and all that. That's just not the way to do it. Yet in a club, I feel like they pay dues and that's what should be done. And yet here I'm getting a lot of suggestions that maybe we should charge our membership to at least say it's worth something, whatever that number is. And that's a hard one. I would feel kind of bad because I already told people it's free and I'm not one to go back on my word. So we'll have to think that through. Certainly the club doesn't need it to put in the club, the extra X number of dollars an hour. But, if it makes people value it, I don't know. I'm rambling here because I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a difficult thing to have a go at. And it's either going to be highly received or highly not. But, I think the real point is that a flying club can bridge those two things that, you know, the value or highly subsidized rate, you know, offer up the, like getting IFR proficient and current on a simulator when, you know, if the flight aspect and pilot currency aspect was managed by a for-profit business, you know, it certainly wouldn't be the same.
Well, one of our members is going to a technical college to get all of his ratings because he would like to make flying a profession. And I know that they have a very good simulator. It's not full motion, but it's a very good simulator. And he paid a lot of money in tuition. And one of the values is he gets to use the sim as much as he wants, whenever he wants. Well, not when, I mean, he's got to schedule it. They only have the one.
Right.
And so if we take that attitude and we say, well, they pay us X number of $100 a year, isn't that in a sense paying for it?
Yeah, I guess it is, but, it's paid for up front, but the continual use and things like that, you know, I think there might be a different angle here that we're trying to preach. You said the value aspect, right?
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, there's a value aspect for a business and that's to make money. And then there's so you have to rent the thing and, you know, if they can't rent it to you, they're going to try to rent it to somebody else to fill the time. But at a flying club, I think the purpose behind renting the simulator would be, you know, to try to keep your time organized and, mm-hmm. and things like that. There's a different, you know, if you're going to rent it for $5 an hour versus $100 an hour, you know, it still puts a value on it, but, you know, your goals and usage of it are probably going to be a little bit different.
I'm getting, as you're talking, I'm thinking through different scenarios that give people options and alternatives. I guess that's kind of a redundant thought there. But, you know, if they do X, then they get the simulator for free. If they don't do X, then they got to pay some minimal fee. Maybe there's something there. I just, like I say, I told a bunch of people that they get to use it as part of their club dues, their annual club dues, and I'm not going to go back on my word, but I think opportunities here to incent people to fly more, to get more proficient, and use the sim in there. And if people are doing that, they're just coming in to make themselves better pilots and then practicing that in the air.
Right. Yeah.
Then they should get to do it for free if they're coming in. I don't know. We'll have to talk about it. I see some things, but it can't be decided in a stream of consciousness that I'm going through now. Before we go back to the board. Anyway,
yeah.
I don't want to bore our listeners already. They've only 20 minutes into the show and we're all kind of getting into all this.
I think the big thing is that, hey, the question, let's go back to the question of point. What, can a flying club be too social? And, you know, there's a, I think it, it can. You know, there's two different divisions, a flight and a social division, and both have to exist in harmony. If one starts to be overly skewed, then, you know, the flight side of the flying club starts to take a hit. And now the flight side, you know, there's really no flying to be offered at the club. So now you're just like a country club, if you will. So you have to, I think they both need to exist and they both need to be balanced. And if they don't, then bad things happen.
I definitely agree they need to be balanced. If we aren't flying, then I can't call it a flying club. Right?
Right.
So they might as well call it the Rocket Ship Club, because we're not doing any of that either.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, we could call ourselves a tennis club.
Right.
We could call ourselves anything.
Right.
No, we're a flying club, and all the other ones are flying clubs, and I think they need to be flying.
Right, yeah, right? Absolutely. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So,
now that we solved that problem.
The grassrooots of it.
Yeah, right, the G-R-O-T.
Wow. I don't know how you do that. You're going to have to give lessons.
G-R-O-I.
On how to come out
screwed
with
up
acronyms.
On last one. Yeah, I don't know. It's just that's what I hear.
That's what you hear.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like north up or track up.
Yeah.
I look at a map and I can only think in north up. I have a real hard time on track up.
Really?
Certainly I know right and left on track up.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you northeast, southwest. Even though it's a compass, my brain doesn't think that. I just know toward the top of the map is north. Toward the upper right is northeast. You know, I can nail that stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's track up, I don't know which way is north. Unless it's pulled back and I see Lake Michigan upside down, you know, or
yeah,
something
right.
like that.
But what if there is no Lake Michigan?
Then I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Right?
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's not so awesome. Right. You're a track up guy, right?
I could go either way.
That's what I hear about you.
Yep. I knew that one was coming.
So did I. As a matter of fact, I think I've used that before.
Yeah.
But, and I actually do show it both ways in terms of when my traffic page, like on my Garmin, if I'm flying one with a 430, I have that on track up.
Right.
So the people, when they normally walk in traffic, they see right or left. It's accurate.
Right.
But on the MFD, or if I have, just the map, I like to have map north up.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's how I work.
Yeah. You know? I know there's certainly a preference track up, north up, but I don't know.
It seems like it's more and more moved to track up. It used to be more the other way. And I was trained to read a map, you know, in the car when we were first learning to drive. You
right.
always put north at the top.
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Maybe that's where the genesis of it is. I don't know. But that's it's what I do.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, we got a great show tonight, don't we?
Yeah, I've got a great guest.
Who?
That's not who, but Lou, Al Waterloo. We're going to talk to you because you had, as we've kind of been doing a tease all the way up to here over the last several weeks, a general aviation geek's dream week is the only way I can think of it.
All right.
You got in a Cirrus in Duluth, Minnesota, right out of the factory, and had the pleasure of flying it to Chile. And I'm not talking temperature. I'm talking all the way to really Chile, going down south of the equator.
Yeah. South.
How exciting. Flying over Cuba, all the things. And I have been waiting and waiting and waiting for this night to talk about it and hear. What was that experience like? I mean, there were so many things from what you saw to what you did, how you passed time, what you ate, how'd you go to the bathroom, you know, customs, flying over Cuba, dodging missiles, whatever you had to do.
And, dodging missiles,
well,
I like it.
Yeah, the Cuban Missile Crisis or something.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know,
well, they had a chafe system on the Cirrus, so no big deal.
Yeah, well, you know, I hear baby powder will get rid of chafing.
Chaff? Is it chafe or chaff?
I think it's chaff. I'm not sure.
Shoot.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, but even if it is, I know chafe is chafe. That thing that gets, when you get moisture between your legs.
Oh, God. Oh, wow. This show is, this is a...
You know what? Our ratings will never be higher.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, now they get into the sexual stuff after all these months.
Wow.
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 Yeah. So, yeah, so I don't even know where to start. I guess let's start at the beginning. So how did you get, not even that, day one, when did you hear about this? Obviously, you don't work for Cirrus.
Right.
But they, you know some people. Tell us how that came about, that you got that phone call and said, hey, do you want to fly a Cirrus to Chile?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, I'd been going, I'd go up to Duluth, I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but on a semi-regular basis to help out new owners take delivery of their airplanes and things like that and do some.
Kind of on a contract basis.
Yeah, on a contract basis, which is cool.
Yeah.
I'm always grateful for the invitation to go up there. And, anyway, we, I'd just gotten back maybe a week or two from helping a new owner take, delivery of their, SR-22. And I got an email, saying, hey, you know, would you like to ferry this airplane down to Chile? And I was on my couch and I was about ready to go to the airport. And I remember my reaction was, woo!
Wow.
That's how much, I was like, it shattered the windows and all that. I was like,
Everyone's eardrums back home now, right?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe it. So I was sitting there, I was like thinking, I'm like, wow, this is gonna be, going to Chile. It's kind of like surreal in a way of like, whoa, this will be pretty gnarly. And then,
probably thought that would be a really good day trip.
Yeah.
I mean, Chile, it's just kind of south of Florida.
Yeah, it's just a little bit south of Florida and all that. So then what was interesting is I was like, wow, I would love to do this. You know, it's like there's a whole stream of emotions that go in. They're like, yeah, wow, go to Chile. This is awesome. This would be surreal. And then there's like, shoot, I don't know if I can get the time off of work. And then it's like, oh man, this would be a really cool trip. You know, I don't want to ask for the time off, but oh, I have to, you know.
Yeah,
the name
a little
of the
back
trip.
And forth.
Right. So then, I said, wow, this is a great trip. Thanks for asking in the email. Let me get back to you. I will, confirm, but you know, count me in. But I'm just, let me confirm.
CMI.
Yeah, CMI.
Not Champaign, Illinois, but count me in.
Count me in. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, I kind of like committed before I really knew I could. I was just like, on my end, I'll just, whatever I need to do, try to make it happen. So, I responded and then I said, I immediately started calling my coworkers to shuffle my schedule around. And that was going to be like the weak link there, trying to get the time off. And luckily, they pulled some strings on their end. And
how much time did you have to ask off? Was it a week?
Way our schedules work for the King Airs, we fly 2 weeks and we have 1 week off. So,
but did you have any idea how long it was going to take you to get to Chile?
Well, they gave a rough estimate. They gave a rough estimate. Said, hey, you know, these days, and it was over a weekend, and then like coming back like Saturday through Wednesday. I was like, oh, that's totally doable. And as we started getting things put together and all that, you know, the dates were kind of changing around, but still within the week time frame, which is fine. But I was hoping to possibly go back to work, but you know, I said, hey, you know what? You know, there's too much fluctuation in these dates at the moment, and you know, there could be weather, maintenance, things like that. You could be customs issues. Or, you know, maybe I'll get shot down over Cuba. So I better just take the whole week off. So anyway, that kind of happened. And, then I just reconfirmed with the person that does all the scheduling at Cirrus. And then, we came back and said, hey, count me in. She's like, great. You'll have a lot of fun. You know, here's a little bit more information on the trip. And, great, I'm so glad we could do this, and thanks very much for helping us out. And I was like, great. And then all of a sudden another stream of emotions came in. It's like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. And then I'm like, oh man, what did I get myself into?
Really?
And I'm trying to figure out from like the flight aspect of it, you know, airspace, charts, weather, you know, border stuff, customs stuff, permit, overflight permits. I had like no clue how to handle all that.
You can tell our age difference. You're thinking all that kind of stuff, and I keep thinking bladder, bladder, bladder.
Bladder, yeah.
Seeing all that water, it's going to make you want to add to it, if you will.
Right, yeah. Have the little trickle. But no, it was kind of a, it was a pretty, like, weird experience trying to figure all that stuff out. You know, I really realized that there's not a whole lot of information on how to even organize a lot of this stuff. You know, even flying to Canada from the United States, it's not very well laid out of what exactly you need to do.
And there's that, shall I call it a fear of the unknown?
Yeah, right. A fear of the unknown. I'm like, you know, so I'm starting to go through this and I, you know, quickly generated a list of questions saying, hey, you know, who's going to pay for fuel? You know, who's going to do this? Who's going to take care of that? Who's, you know, do I have to do all this? You know, who, you know, can I borrow a JEP subscription number for, you know, global charts and stuff like that? You know, we need all this stuff.
Well, and I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Cirrus should be providing, they're hiring you to do it. Right.
Well, yeah, so a lot of times with the contract work is that you have to pay for everything and then you send an invoice. And I was like, you know what, I don't even know if I have a credit card limit that will, you know, pay enough for, you know, 15 top-offs, you know, right, in a Cirrus, you know, let alone at international fuel prices.
Well, not only that, but custom forms or ferry, I don't know what you had to do just to fly over Cuba and stuff. I guess we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, so I was like, that kind of really, like, struck me. So I'm like, hey, you know, then I send an email back. I'm like, hey, can I get a credit card for this? I'm not going to be able to float this by myself. There's just too much, you know, it's pretty expensive to coordinate a trip like this.
And they probably get it from the owner. The new owner has to pay for it.
Well, normally yes, but not in this scenario.
All right.
But you know, they said, yeah, as far as the money side goes, you know, don't worry about that. But the overflight permits, you know, paperwork, border, customs stuff, you know, charts and all that, that's still a pretty big thing to figure out.
Oh, you know? If you've never done it before, too, and you don't want to mess up with someone that's expecting you to get there.
Right, exactly. So trying to, like that, I started to have, like, this little mental freak out of, like, oh my God, what do I need to get? You know, what do I need this, I need that, you know, are these really even the right things that I need? I don't want to show up and, you know, get intercepted in Colombian airspace or get shot down over Cuba.
I wouldn't want to get shot down anywhere.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly. You know, and making sure how to leave the ADAs and all, you know, that's my first time really dealing with the ADAs, other than maybe like Washington D.C. when it was the ADAs before it became a special flight rules area, but yeah, so it's kind of an interesting thought process behind all of it.
Oh, I can't imagine. And so, okay, so now you're leading up to it. I know if I'm just going to fly, sometimes I can't fall asleep because I'm so excited. What was the night before? Did you sleep in Duluth, or did you drive up to Duluth on the day you were departing?
Yeah. So anyway, we had a, so what happened was, you know, that these plane, I usually drive up to Duluth and I'll drive back, but, I ended up renting a car driving up.
Sure.
So I could just leave it there and then we're going to have to airline back. So I'm like, you know, I'll just drop the car off and fly back to Chicago rather than drive, you know, so on and so forth. But so that was kind of nice. And, yeah, so we drove up, and my girlfriend and I, we made a nice little kind of half weekend in Duluth, which is a really cool town, by the way.
As long as it's not snowing in May.
Yeah, well, it was snowing.
I know.
And it was cool. They have, there's a lot of cool things to do. They have a, little scenic railway, a lot of boats. As far as a transportation town, it's a really cool town. They have a lot of shipping, a lot of railways and aerospace.
Cool.
So, anyway, enough of that. That was not paid by the Duluth Chamber of Commerce.
Our Department of Tourism.
Yeah, right. No, but that was cool. So, going up before, to answer your question about the night before, it was pretty cool. I was just like, I'm like, hey, this is going to be a fun trip. And, a nice little excursion to, you know, to go along on.
But did you fall asleep?
Yeah.
The night before?
Yeah. I think it was just because, we spent so much time outside and it was cold that I was just like purely exhausted.
Great. See, I get, that's where my adrenaline starts to flow and I can't fall asleep. And the other thing, and maybe we can talk about it a little later if, when appropriate, but you know, I'm so used to taking these 1 hour flights.
Right.
Chicago, Cedar Rapids, Chicago, Cedar Rapids. Then all of a sudden on Memorial Day, I go Chicago, Kansas City, and it's, you know, over 2 hours, but I'm thinking, God, this is taking a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and I that was only 2 hours, and I love being in an airplane. I mean, I was in the airplane today for 2 hours just flying locally, practicing approaches and all. But just flying straight and level kind of gets, not boring, but you know, I was truly taking my wife and we were going to go visit my son. So now I'm translating that to 26 hours.
Right.
And I'm 2 hours, I'm kind of going, okay, are we there yet? I want to get to the next phase of flight. So,
right.
Did you have any concerns or what were you thinking about 26 hours or whatever, 26, 26
and a half? Yeah, it was like 26 and a half hours.
26 and a half hours that you're going to do in a very short period of time. Were you worried about being bored silly or falling asleep or whatever?
That's actually a really great point. I remember before I went to bed, I made sure that all of my songs on my iPod were downloaded from the iCloud. And put physically onto my iPod, iPhone. And, so that way I could listen to music along the way, you know, and,
that's a lot of music.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, you know, it was cool though, you know, so I had that and that was really about it.
So you slept fine and then you took off from Duluth. Now what was the first day? How many hours, how many miles?
The first leg was pretty cool. We flew from Duluth. We woke up, the team kind of met at,
Team?
Yeah, the team.
Tell us about the team.
The team. So the team was pretty cool. There's a representative from Cirrus, another pilot, and then myself. We all had, breakfast, beforehand, just to say hello and kind of go over some of the rest of the details and all that. But, so we had breakfast, we went up to the factory to pick up the airplanes, and they said, okay, here's your plane, and all that, and just make sure there's a life raft, all this stuff on, we gotta update your charts, we gotta do all this stuff, and I'm like, whoa, I thought all this stuff would have been done by now.
Yeah, really?
But no, it wasn't, which was totally fine though. And so we're kinda organizing the stuff, I'm trying to load my luggage, file flight plan, and do, you know, look at the weather for the route that we're going. You know, we're flying all the way from Duluth down to Key West.
So that was the first day, Key West?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of miles.
Yeah, it was. Believe it or not, that was probably the longest. No, it wasn't the longest. I think it was one of the longest days of flying. That was like the...
And how many stops to Key West?
There were, planned two, and we made it three. We planned on two, but we couldn't do it. So we flew from Duluth. It was really foggy, so it was like 200 and a half.
Wow.
So we took off out of Duluth, and then we climbed up. And it was kind of this weird low / cold front passing through the Midwest and all that. So we ended up going from Duluth to Smyrna, Tennessee, which is in the suburbs of Nashville.
Yep.
And we landed, got some fuel there, and then we were going to go Nashville direct to Key West, which that was like going to be like 850 miles or something like that, 900 miles.
Wow. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
So that, you know, again, from a fatigue perspective, let alone the fuel and again, I'll bring back that bladder idea. So where did you end up stopping?
Yeah, so what happened was Tennessee, the pilot that I was with, you know, I just met him at breakfast the first time, and he's like, "Great, I topped off. I'll see you in Key West." I'm like, "Hey, wait, you know, I just want to let you know I don't have a credit card, you know, with me here." I did have one, but just, you know, for...
But you're a liar.
Exactly. I lied to his face. No, I'm kidding. I did have one, but, you know, it was, just for personal use. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, you've got the money and everything. So, you know, before you
Why
leave.
Why did he have them? I am confused. Why?
Well, so he, this guy used to be a former employee at Cirrus that had just recently retired.
Oh, okay.
So I guess there's a little bit more element of trust with him, which is totally fine.
Yep.
And so anyway, he had a credit card issued by Cirrus and everything like that. And then so I'm like, hey, before you go, make sure you pay for fuel. He's like, oh, okay, thanks for telling me. I didn't know that. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad. So we, you know, he stuck around, paid for the fuel, then we both kind of left at the same time. Now, the weird thing is that these Cirruses have, these Garmin 1000 packages in them, or a derivative of the Garmin 1000.
Right, the perspective
system. And, you know, it's this beautiful thing. It's got cameras, it's got XM weather, all this stuff. Well, these planes didn't have any of that. So they didn't have weather. They didn't have these, you know, enhanced vision systems. They didn't have, they really had, you know, none of the bells and whistles that you would normally find in one here in the United States. In fact, it actually had an ADF, a little King Radio ADF.
No way!
Built in. Yeah.
How do they get that into a Cirrus?
They added it in. But where you think about it, going to Chile, a lot of this stuff is, they have a lot of NDBs down there.
Wow. I would, actually, you say it makes sense. Not to me. I thought ADF was just gone.
Well, here in the United States, but elsewhere in the other parts of the world, it's really kind of it's still a prominent way of navigating.
No clue. I did not have a clue.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a, it's pretty nice. When you start to, so that was one of the differences. I was like, when you first get in the plane, it's like, huh, this thing has an ADF in it. You know, it's like, that's weird, you know. Yeah. Here in the United States, it's nice so you can listen to AM radio while you're flying. But now, it, as far as navigating, you know, how many NDBs are there out there? Not a lot.
Not a lot, no.
So it was weird as we landed in Smyrna. We looked at the weather radar, and you know, there's a whole line of storms in Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida that we had to fly through, and it was just old school, like picking your way through thunderstorms with no onboard weather capabilities at all.
Boy, I'm surprised. Maybe because the new owners, it's their responsibility to put the weather, or maybe they don't have it available in Chile. I don't know. Maybe you can answer why it didn't have it.
Well, you know what? Those services don't work outside of the United States.
Okay.
So
there's a business opportunity.
Yeah, right. So they, you know, there's really no reason to have it, and you're sitting there like, I'm trying to pull up the weather, and it's like, I'm like, man, the weather's not turned on. So I go to find the weather. Well, the weather page is deleted out of the perspective system and all that. So it was, I was like, okay, well, we're just gonna do this old school. And you know, you really learn how air traffic control has changed in the last couple of years. Even like 5-6 years ago, when you know, you'd run a twin to build some multi-engine time to go to the airlines that didn't have any onboard weather. You know, a lot of these air traffic control facilities had, I guess, primitive radar where they would, they would pick up precip, but they didn't, you know, they couldn't really see how heavy it was or anything like that.
Right.
Now, you know, you tell the best thing you could do, you know, what I did is I'm like, hey, I've got negative weather on board, tell that to air traffic control, and then they say, okay, fly this heading, fly that heading, da 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 da. You know, a lot of this stuff was kind of embedded, so you really need to rely on them to walk you through some of this stuff.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I know we've talked before. I was in a Cirrus where the traffic failed on that particular flight, and I was like, oh, should I fly?
Yeah.
And then having to say, wait a minute. There didn't used to be this, and we flew just fine, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
You get comfortable with all these wonderful situational awareness resources.
Right.
And when they're not there, it makes you uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, all right, what's the next level down? It's like, okay, next level down. You get, what's the left? It's like, okay, have air traffic control. You walk through that. And, you know, I think a negative weather on board, you know, phraseology should be added to the AIM or the pilot controller glossary.
Yeah, they see Cirrus
like
and they assume, oh.
Yeah.
Although if it's not prevalent in you know, down toward the equator and south of the equator or outside the U.S., then they know that.
Right. Yeah. In the United States, they're like, oh, hey, this is leading edge machine. You don't have weather. But
right. So that would be the only area. But once you got down to Key West and beyond south, they probably knew exactly what you were dealing with once you're outside of the continental United States, right?
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, yes, but a lot of, we'll get to this later on, but a lot of the air traffic control facilities, they don't have radar.
Wow.
So now they're just doing it by pen and pencil.
Wow.
Yeah. So as far as any weather avoidance or, you know, looking ahead to, you know, it's
that gives you confidence.
Yeah.
Why don't you try 10 degrees left? Why? Because last time I told you to go 10 degrees right. So, you know.
Right. Let's just by the
we'll average
process
it out.
Of elimination.
Exactly.
So that was kind of cool. That was one thing that I really kind of enjoyed and all that. You kind of, you know, really realized that the air traffic control system as far as weather and helping you is really kind of been beefed up. And, you know, if you just tell air traffic control that you don't have any weather, you know, on board, hey, they walk you through, you know, all the hazards and stuff.
Yeah, as long as they have it.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What I'm saying. They're just putting a dartboard against the
right,
the
exactly.
Map anyway, but anyway, well, that's so cool. So, all right, now you've gotten down to Key West.
Right. Well, we stopped in Fort Myers. It was by this time we left at like 10 a.m. in Duluth. We stopped in Fort Myers. It was 9 p.m.
Wow.
And we had to get some gas.
And you didn't have any special tanks. It's still a 91-gallon tank, right? Or 92?
Yeah, 92 gallons all the way down. So you know, we tried to go direct to Key West, but, you know, we were ending up with, you know, we had a 40-knot headwind. And,
wow.
You know, it was predicting they were going to land with like 8 gallons of gas.
No, and, thank you.
Yeah, that wasn't. That wasn't going to be nice. So we stopped there. We topped off and did a quick turn. Ended up in Key West and spent the night. We ended up getting to the hotel at like 11:45 or midnight, and we were going to leave again at like 6 a.m. And it was just, you know,
so you flew to Key West in the dark at night. I mean,
yeah.
Is that? I mean, you had to go over water. You didn't just follow the keys out.
No, right?
we went direct.
Yeah.
So that'd be weird. I mean, it's like no clouds, but no vision.
No clouds, no vision. It was just kind of dark. You know, you could kind of see. It was a pretty clear night, so you could still see some of like the yellow, like,
yeah,
you know, domes of light for the distant cities like Miami and stuff like that. You could really see like the shape of, you know, Florida. And,
yep,
you know,
the keys
like going down and, you know, each key had its own little lights and then like the curve, you know, the peninsula of Florida, how it curved and where it ended and stuff. So that was pretty cool. But you're out over the water and it's dark. And I was like, you have this little thing of like, huh, here we are, you know. And
I'm thinking, I think I hear a sound. And where, if I lose my engine now, because I play that game anyway, where am I going to touch down? I don't know. It's pitch black. There's nothing there.
Yeah, right.
And which one, where's the shark?
Yeah, right. Exactly. But you know what? I wasn't too worried about that, you know, because you're in, you know, contact with your airplane. You know, I was in touch with the airplane ahead of me. You know, we were using the handful.
The handful.
The handful. You know, the handful frequency.
Oh yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, exactly. So a handful, and then you know, so we were talking. You know, there's airliners, a bunch of airliners going into Key West. You know, in touch with Miami Center and everything. So, you know, and you were really...
But they can't help you if you go down. I mean,
yeah, they can't, but, you know, you could radio for help pretty quick, and, you know, you're not that far off the coast, so...
I'm sorry, you're that far off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not like you're going to swim.
Right, no, it's not like you're going to swim back, but, you know, as far as getting help, you know, pretty quickly and things like that.
You're a better man than me.
Yeah.
You know, daytime is one thing,
yeah.
But at night, I mean, it's just pitch black out there.
Yeah, it wasn't too... Yeah, it was. I mean, it was pitch black and, you know, just like, hey, you're over the ocean. You do, don't get me wrong. I had a little bit of that feeling, but then, you know what, as I can look back on it now, compare that to some of the other overwater legs, this was a piece of cake.
Now, I'm not an astronomer or anything, but I absolutely love the night sky. And we have a lot of light pollution in Chicago.
Yeah.
So, but I remember as a kid driving out into the boonies and being amazed at how many things, you know, stars you could see and all that. So now when you're out over the ocean or the Gulf, or I guess at that point, if you're on that side, what was it like? Did you look up and could you see 5 bazillion stars and meteors? And
you know what's interesting? I don't think it's really ever been able to see that many more stars at night from airplanes. Even from the airliners when you're at like, you know, 30,000 feet or even, you know, in a Cirrus over. It's kind of weird. It's a weird thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, you know, I don't know if it's because you're moving or, you know, there's glare going, you know, on the windshield.
Or maybe because you're wearing the hood.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it's not like you pick up like a trillion stars.
Oh, no, I'm kind of
weird. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing.
Do you ever see the movie Titanic?
Yeah.
And when it went down and they showed the boat go down and then you just had the lifeboats and they showed a sky. It's so weird. It's not, obviously it's not what the movie's about.
Right.
But they showed the stars in the sky and I just keep thinking that is so cool.
Yeah.
Right. And just to be out there and I loved like trying to watch for meteors or I'm kind of getting off on a tangent, but just, I'm picturing that's what you saw on your trip down there.
Yeah.
Nothing that's around you except the stars above.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, they existed, but it's weird. It's difficult. You can't really, it might be the way that your night vision is set up or
yep,
something.
Could be.
Just, you know, just a lot of that. I don't know what it is.
You had too many candles going in the cockpit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the burning of the midnight lamp. But no, it was you don't really see a whole lot of that.
So now you're going to Key West, day one. You left at 10, you arrive at 10, right? Actually probably.
Yeah, later.
Or later.
Right.
With a few stops, but you put 12 hours of flying in that day?
Almost, yeah. Oh. A little less.
So were you
pooped?
I was going to say mentally exhausted. And I keep on wanting to come back. Were you able to make all the legs without?
Yeah. So using the facilities. Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, able to hold it. You know, we're in the air for
a young man's game.
Yeah. four and a half hours.
No, it's not bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, like believe me, there's a lot of consciousness about, you know, what you drank beforehand and things like that.
But you don't want to get dehydrated so that you start
right.
not just, seeing right and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had that decision before.
It's kind of a fine line of how do you juggle that. And I don't know. I think there's the right amount. And I don't know. It
obviously worked.
Yeah, exactly. So we got there, and I was beat, and we ended up having a you know, it's like, hey, all right, we'll see you at 6 a.m. It's like, okay, great, you know. And that's where you learn that, like a ferry pilot, this is not, you know, this is serious work. It's not really vacation. You know,
right.
You're in Key West, yes, but you're here to use the airport, the pavement, buy fuel, and leave, you know.
Wow.
And it's not like, yeah, we're going to go vacation, sit on the beach. It's like, it's serious work because somebody just bought an airplane and they want it, you know. So you have to get it there.
And it was a brand new airplane.
Right.
Exactly. Did you have any mechanical on your first day?
No.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was great.
Actually, I looked up your airplane to see what it had done, and it had, you could see the previous days before you got there, they were doing some IFR flights.
Oh, cool.
And you could see the little jaunts they were taking back and forth, and I said, I bet you they're breaking in that engine and making sure all the systems work.
Yeah, so they were doing that. The clients had flown up to Duluth to do the training in the airplanes.
Oh,
and
nice.
And flew back.
You think they would have taken it back themselves at that, just taken delivery at that point?
Yeah, right.
Obviously not.
So, we ended up flying to Key West. The next day we woke up, you know, it was kind of a hurry up and wait kind of day because the big holdup was Cuba. And
they have that effect on people.
Yeah, right. And it was to get overflight permits. And, you know, as we're waiting, we just kept waiting and waiting and waiting and trying to get these overflight permits. And our goal was to go from Key West to Grand Cayman to Panama City and spend the night in Panama City.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So, the 11 a.m. rolls around, noon, 1 o'clock, and we said, hey, you know, we don't want to get into Panama City at nighttime.
Why?
Flying over the ocean at night. There's your flying over the ocean.
Well, that's what you did.
Well, that's what we did previous, but now, so we'll get into this when we get to this segment, but, you know, there's a pretty specific reason. You know, now you're in international airspace, you know, unfamiliar things, out of radio contact with anybody.
Oh,
you know, now
yeah.
It's pretty bad.
But so, of course, you had safety gear, not that that made it that much better, but you had a life raft on board.
Right, a life raft, a little beacon, you know, personal, you know, finding beacon that uses GPS and stuff.
PFB?
Like yeah.
Personal finding beacon?
Yeah. Exactly. So we flew, at around 4:30, we got our overflight permits granted to, for Cuba. And, what we had to do is we had our flight plans filed. You know, this is kind of where my knowledge of everything of aviation kind of stopped. You know, stayed here in the United States, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, how do you file an international flight plan? How do you do this? Where's my route? You know, things like this and that. You know, we bought these Garmin or Jeppesen trip kits. You ever seen those?
No, I mean, I'm familiar with the trip kit from the electronic services where you say, I'm going this, and here are all the maps you need.
Right.
The jet view. I forget what it was called, but yeah, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was a little trip kit. So you had now we're going off of paper charts and navigating that way. All the airways were loaded in, already loaded in the perspective system.
Nice.
Which was nice. But, as far as understanding what VOR is what are the frequencies and airspace boundaries, we had to get trip kits.
TKs.
Yeah, exactly. So paper e. Jeppesen plates and charts.
E for exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. So, we ended up having, we got our permits, we taxied over to customs, and, they had to verify that this is, you know, since this is a commercial sale, all this like export stuff had to, apply to this and all that, so they had to verify that everything being exported was correct and things, and you have to. But even if you were to go on your own international general aviation trip, you have to tell the border patrol that hey, this is the time we're going to leave. You know, these are the people on board. Kind of give them a manifest of who's leaving the country.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it still seems like a hassle.
Right, it kind of was. So anyway, we went over to. We ended up taking off, and you know, it was pretty busy at the airport. And you know, you're sitting there, you're like, at Key West, you're like, okay, you take off, and then there's just water, right? You're just on this little island, and you're like, oh man, this is for real, you know. And you get a heading of like 180,
and you're all by yourself, right?
Yeah, you're all by yourself. You start getting a heading of 180, and they say, okay, fly. You know, clear to this intersection, and now you start to see the ADAs pop up and the warn defense areas and all these warning areas and stuff like that, and you're just like, wow.
Was there anyone else talking at the same time you? Was it pretty quiet when you weren't communicating with ATC?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of people, a lot of airliners, actually, and you could hear the guy, you know, airliners checking on from, like, coming from international to, you know, this one fix. I think it's like Tadpo.
Tadpole?
Yeah, it's like Tadpole. Tapto or Tadpo. I get the T and the D and the P messed up, which comes first. But it's this fix that, like, is the arrival and departure fix out of the United States. And you end up going there, and you start hearing handoffs. And Miami Center is like, okay, contact Havana Center on 1-2-3-4-5 or whatever. So
yeah.
it's pretty cool. So finally, we got our handoff, to Havana Center. And, you know, that was it. You know, you're just like, wow, you know, we've left the United States airspace. And, you know, now we're officially a foreigner. You know, it's kind of this weird thing. And, so as we're flying, you know, they say contact Havana Center. I think it was 1205 something, I believe it was. And, Yeah, it's cool. It's like the first time you're like, I'm just getting really excited to call Havana Center on the radio.
Yeah, that'd be very cool.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's cool is that you, like, this is where things really started to happen and your eyes start to open up. It's like, you hear Cuba. What do you think of Cuba?
Cigars.
Cigars.
But missiles.
A country, yeah, missiles. The communism, all
communism,
this, you know,
yeah,
Russians,
yeah. Yeah.
Cold War stuff, all the stuff that you learn in grade school about, you know, how Cuba is, and you listen how Miami Center interacts with Havana Center and vice versa, and, you know, how American Airlines, not the company, but like United, all these other American carriers interact with Havana. Havana starts, you know, people are asking, you know, I think there was American Airlines that was asking for, you know, hey, can we get direct Armel, which is like the VOR at Washington Dulles. And, you know, Havana Center said, clear direct Armel. You know, it's like,
yeah, what do they care?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
good luck with
whatever.
That.
You know, so they're doing that. They were going, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool, you know, to hear this. So, you know, we're still about like 50 miles away from Cuba when we got transferred over. And but then like shortly thereafter you start seeing like land come into view, and it's like wow, this is another country.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And you're at 6,000 feet, and which they use what they call flight levels, you know. So
flight level 60?
Yeah, flight level 60. So they had a we have transition altitudes, right? What's a transition altitude here in the United States?
What do you mean? It's not flight level. You don't reference it as flight level.
Yeah, you do.
You do?
Yeah.
I guess I've never had one then, because I've never said that.
Yeah, there's a transition altitude for, you know, standard altimeter settings.
Oh, right. Oh, you mean at 18,000 feet?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So the guy's like, the guy in front of me, he had done all this international flying. He's like, did you catch that flight level 60? And I'm like, yeah, I did. And then I start looking at the TCAS, and I look at him, and he's like 2,100 feet above me, and I'm like, oh, this is weird. He's like, you caught that, right? Flight level 60. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'm that's what I'm doing right now, you know. And that's the interesting thing is the first thing that really struck me about international flying was that all these different transition altitudes. In the United States, it's 18,000 feet. So a lot of general aviation guys, unless you have a turbocharger, don't really know what a transition altitude is, because, you know, you got to get above 18,000 feet. And
right.
Then you get that. And so they say flight level 60 or flight level 80 or flight level 40. And, it was kind of a crazy little thing. You know, one of the first nuances of international flying.
Yeah. And again, I got to go back to the bathroom and eating and stuff like that. Did you have food in the plane?
Yeah,
but like
the night before I left, I was actually laying in bed, and I was like, you know what? It'd probably be worthwhile to go get. You know, they probably at these FBOs, they probably don't have crew cars or airport restaurants or stuff like that. So I went and grabbed peanut butter and jelly and some trail mix and granola bars. I literally got out of bed, got back in, and like got back dressed. And drove to the grocery store.
So you mean like you had a jar of peanut butter with a spoon in it?
Yeah.
And you were just eating the spoon?
No, I had plastic knives and stuff. And
plastic bread.
Yeah. So I bought a loaf of bread and peanut butter and jelly. And
how much weight did you gain on this trip?
What?
I mean, all the carbs and all that.
That's it.
See, my problem is I would have eaten the entire way there. I would not have stopped.
You wouldn't have.
We get there and they go, why do you have 75 empty boxes of Triscuits in your backseat?
Triscuits.
I love Triscuits.
Man.
With a hint of salt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, but it's just I don't know, that was kind of I just figured it, what's like power food that you could have that's easy to make and like non-controversial, like crossing borders.
Yeah.
And going through customs.
Well, see, peanut butter made from peanuts, and that might be something you can't import into.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I would have gone with, like,
Lunchables?
Spam.
God. Yeah, so Maybe I should have. I've never had Spam.
I don't think I have. I have. Now, this is going to bring back some memories. How many of you remember Underwood deviled ham?
Oh.
It came in a can like tuna fish, and it was ham, but it was... It looked, yeah, but we used to have that.
Underwood
was the...
Deviled ham?
Underwood deviled ham. Yeah, and they had a little devil on the can. It was a tuna fish type can. Come on, someone out there. What do they tweet to let us know?
Hashtag simple flight.
Hashtag simple flight. By the way, we're doing kind of the travel log here, and at least we don't have him going through 150 slides, although I do want to see pictures.
Do you want me? Oh, I'll pick up the pace.
Well, I just want people to, if they have questions, let's keep them moving here. We're slowing down to subsonic.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we'll pick it up. So anyway, we flew over Cuba, and you start looking at, you're over Cuba, and you start seeing that, wondering why this is a weird, what's wrong, why do we...
Politically, why is it on edge?
Yeah, why are we on edge with Cuba? It looks like a cool place to live. They're talking to me, they're helping me out. It's like, hey, this is cool. So, Cuba's a very, narrow island.
Yep.
Narrow. So it only took, 20 minutes to fly over, and then you're back over water again and all that.
I wonder how many people get over to Cuba and say, sorry, we're having an engine problem. We have to set down.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the cigar patch.
Right. So we got over but they only have one or two frequencies for their center control. They're handling airliners at 35,000 feet. They're handling me and the other guy at 6,000 feet. And all of a sudden I lost radio contact with them. And just because we had just, we were out of radio range, and I was trying to really, that's when I started to get nervous a little bit. I'm like, I don't know if there's any specific protocols or anything like that. And, that's a cool picture.
Is that Cuba? It says it is, but it looks too thin.
Probably.
I'm looking at La Musica Cubana Hoy. I don't even know. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, there it is. Oh my God, that's cool.
Yeah, but anyway, so it was pretty neat. There's a little couple ancillary islands. That could be one of them.
I digress somewhat. Is the I noticed in Key West. I've never flown down to the Keys. I've not been to the Keys, but there's three airports in Key West or something. Two of them have control towers.
Yeah.
What's with that?
The naval air stations.
Oh, it looked like it was just regular.
Yeah. So, but one thing that was neat. So, there was a airliner that I was American Airlines. I was trying to get a hold of Havana because I didn't know what my next frequency was or where it was going to be, and I lost radio touch. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to keep flying. And this is the nice thing about the Garmin perspective. It has all kind of your next frequencies queued up and stuff like that. Look at that Devilwood ham.
Underwood deviled ham.
Wow.
Thank you for tweeting that in. That's it. It didn't look that good. It was a little bit older style. This is a little bit new, but this is it. Yep.
Wow.
Deviled ham spread. What memories.
This God. Is,
and look at it. It says premium quality on it.
Oh.
So you knew it had to be good. Otherwise, that they couldn't have put premium quality. Thank you, Twitter, for sending that in. That is it. Underwood deviled ham.
Exactly. Maybe for the official food of ferry pilots.
Yes, I'm not going to touch that.
Yeah, so. But American Airlines, I was trying to get a hold of Havana. Havana was trying to get a hold of me. So I reached out to America.
They thought you defected.
Yeah, exactly. An American Airlines. And they said, hey, yeah, we'll relay a message. So then they just contact this, contact approach control on this frequency.
But you were in a formation of two, right?
Yeah.
So could they talk to him, or you both lost contact?
We both lost contact.
And were you visually separated? I mean, you weren't flying 18 inches apart.
No, I mean, he was 30 miles ahead. And he couldn't hear anything. I was I was trying to talk. I was talking with him on their discrete frequency. He's I lost them too, and I don't know what's,
Why 30 miles? It would be fun to kind of see somebody.
Well, engine run-ups and stuff like that. He got in the plane first and all that.
So I would have slowed down for you. Yeah. I just want you to know that.
Thank you. So we got out there, and, it's American Airlines. Hey, contact Cayman Approach Control. on, you know, 120.2. And then before he said goodbye, he's like, man, I'm glad you're doing that, except, you know, not me, you know, in a Cirrus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like, I'm like, yeah. He's like, I wouldn't want to be in a Cirrus right now. I'm like, hey, I would. I wouldn't want to be in your plane right now.
Oh, that was from an airline.
Yeah, it was from America.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, it was pretty cool. So we get up to, Cayman. That was kind of cool just to see that, appear out of nowhere. You know, Cayman approach control. That's when you start realizing, you know, hey, they don't have radar facilities on there. So the approach controller, you know, would say, you have to start giving position reports, altitude reports. You know, they say, hey, do you see the island? Yep. Okay, follow the west edge of the island. Make a left base for runway, I think it was 8 or 10, and you're clear to land.
Wow.
And then taxi the ramp. So the same guy that you talked to for approach, tower, and ground is the same guy.
I wonder if he makes 3 salaries.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So once again, power night, we took off again, and we were heading to Panama, and that was our big overwater leg. It was like 700 miles or something like that. Basically from Chicago to Denver over water.
Wow. I could do it and I'd get my head on straight, but I'd be thinking 1,000 miles an hour. Like, what do I do if? But again, I got to remember they outfitted you with the lifeboat and they tether it to the airplane.
Yeah.
And I keep envisioning this airplane going down and taking your lifeboat with it.
Yeah, so you tether the lifeboat to the airplane so that, like, theoretically the airplane with the parachute should settle on the water. Then you throw the life raft past.
Notice he said theoretically.
Yeah, well, yeah. Have you tested it?
No.
I haven't either.
And maybe they haven't.
Yeah.
But theoretically, you'll be okay.
Yeah, theoretically. So anyway, they, you know, you're supposed to land, open up the door, throw this life pack. It's like a backpack into the water. And it floats, and it's tethered to the plane so it doesn't float away because it's just a floating backpack. Then if the plane starts to sink, what happens? It's like those life jackets in the plane or
yep.
in a airliner you pull down on the tab.
Right.
The sinking action of the airplane basically pulls down on the tab and blows the life raft up. And
oh,
then
cool.
The life raft is now floating, and the force of the plane going down, you know, the tension on the rope, it's supposed to break, and you know, all yeah. Then you're supposed to gracefully climb in,
yeah,
and hang out, you know. So
yeah,
whatever. But so we had a. But as far as the thought process went, you know, we took off out of the Caymans, and the guy said, "Okay, contact Kingston Center now on this frequency."
Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah, Kingston Center. And, you call, you know, on this frequency and, have a good day. So we're trying to get a hold of this guy. Couldn't get a hold of him. So we go back to Cayman. The guy's like, okay, well, let me see what they want you to do. So he said, okay, as we're flying away from Cayman's at 200 knots, you know, the guy's like, okay, call San Andreas approach in 300.
Whose fault is it though?
What's that?
San Andreas.
I don't get it.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the San Andreas Fault?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Wow. I don't know.
You're having fun over there tweeting.
That's yeah, awesome. Well, I keep getting the same tweet over and over. How do I stop that?
I don't know. So anyway, so they say, hey, cleared, you know, in 350 miles, call San Andreas Approach. They'll be expecting you. Kingston says your coast is clear. Like, and then you lose radio contact with everybody.
Wow. So can you understand these controllers? Are they heavy?
No, it's perfectly fine. And even by the time we got over to San Andreas Approach, it's a little island off of Mexico, they were very understandable. Yeah, you know, they're talking in Spanish most of the time, but you call up in English and they know English. And going to Panama City was really cool. We flew right over the Panama Canal and all that, and that was a very Americanized, you know, system.
Yep.
Lots of radar center. They, you know, you hear clear for the visual approach, all this stuff, and you go. But when we landed, that's where they had like the canines waiting for you to sniff your plane and drugs and all that. It was kind of.
Did they find any drugs on you?
You know, they found about 10 pounds of cocaine.
No, found 10 pounds of peanut butter.
Yeah, right. So we went through the customs really quick. They had handlers, which was nice. The handlers are worth their weight in gold, who basically take care of all your paperwork and customs. And you give them your passports, they come back, and they say, welcome to, you know, Panama. It's like, great. You know, and then
that's pretty cool.
You file and leave. The interesting thing about filing flight plans out of the United States is that, you know, we have 4 flights, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could file from an iPad. Well, you can't really do that, at internationally. All these airports have offices, airport information service office, and, you have to go there, file the flight plan. That's where you pay your user fees and stuff like that, landing fees. They file your flight plan for you, put you in the system. They check your overflight permits and stuff.
Wow.
And then you go. So and that's where you get your weather briefings, if they have that.
So, okay. So now the first day you went over 12 hours.
Yeah.
Second day, how long did you fly? And third day, how long did you fly? You want to kind of take me through.
So the first day was like 12. The next day, each day was about 8 hours after that. 2 4-hour legs.
And so you flew 8 hours the next 2 days and you were there.
Right.
And 2 4-hour legs. So to me, that's very doable, right?
Yeah.
So did you get to enjoy the nightlife of these places? And
no, I mean, it was still, you're sitting there like kind of on edge, you know, out of Panama. We're going over, you know, the North Pacific now, and in Colombian airspace, you know, there's all these storms around. The only way thank God for weather.com. Otherwise you would have no other global satellite images or radar images or anything
really?
Like that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. You know, it's just all that they give you a printed summary of what the METARs and TAFs are supposed to be. No in route weather or anything like that. And, the only thing that we had to, you know, for reference, we're like, hey, we're getting in the rainforest area, is, you know, weather.com looking at a global satellite image.
Weather.com isn't very good. I use it at home all the time. Like, well, this isn't right.
Yeah. No, it's not. And it's just kind of that was the weird thing is that, like, you know, a lot of this was kind of like ad lib. And, you know, I had the gentleman that I was flying with, he had flown a lot internationally, but, like, you know, flown within a country, hopped on an airliner, flew to another country, you know, stayed in the traffic pattern or, you know, the demo area and done that. So this is our first time of, like, really crossing ground and flying, you know, from country to country.
Wow. So, wow, this is just so neat. And now, you know, you still had a sense, even though you kind of were there for a mission to deliver the plane, you were there for multiple hours. You did something other than sleep. You had to go and taste the food, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. So we had to go out and
that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to go out and eat and all that. I had a lot of seafood.
Yeah, really, I guess that was great.
Yeah, oh, it was outstanding.
And except when you went to Mexico, I'd be afraid I'd get sick.
Well, we never went to Mexico.
But isn't Grand Cayman, well, it's in that area, right?
Oh, it's like just south of Cuba.
No.
Yeah. It's in the middle of the Caribbean Sea, yeah.
Well, where's... See, I gotta go look at my map. Now everyone's gonna say, how stupid is Eppner?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you would have failed your geography quiz.
Okay, yeah. Because I'm thinking, you know, when I went to like Cancun and all that, we went from Miami, so kind of went that direction.
Yeah,
I
mean, well, that's because that's American Airlines hub.
Oh. I don't know if I was on America. I was on Air Jamaica, as a matter of fact.
Oh, was it?
I don't even remember now.
Yeah, so that's if great. You were...
No, I wasn't. yeah, anyway.
So Grand Cayman Islands, it's actually a British territory.
Okay.
It's very American down there.
Yeah, no, I've been to, you know, everything from when you go east of Miami to, like, Bahamas and west. You know, we did the Caribbean cruise thing where you stop at different places.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just all messed up.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel and understand, yes, I am geographically challenged. I don't even know the boroughs in New York, but anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, so this is cool. So you spent all this time, And then you came home on the airlines. Were you happy to come home on the airlines, or were you wish you were flying?
No, that was one of the things, like, is we got, we started flying, and, you know, even though it was a 10-hour flight home in a 767, you know, the guy I was flying with him back, he was like really bummed out. And I was like, I'm bummed out too. This is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is like, I would rather be flying. I'd rather fly general aviation all the time. You know, we were totally in the sweet spot of a 767, right? You know, flying this long haul international thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was funny because I was sitting next to the guy, you know, the guy on the flight home, and he's like, so, you know, he's telling me what he did. He was from Germany. He's like an engineer and works on a lot of these mining projects, which Chile is a very mining-oriented country. And so anyway, he's like, what do you do? He's like, well, I'm like, I'm a pilot. He's like, cool, nice. So, you know, did you fly, what airline do you fly for? I'm like, well, I don't fly for an airline. He's like, what did you do? It's like, oh, so you flew around here. I'm like, no, we flew an airplane all the way from like nearly Canada down here. And he's like, what? He had no clue. You know, so try to like explain, you know, the reverse trip that, you know, you're flying in this airliner with like a stranger and, you know, saying, hey, yeah, we just did in a little 4-seat airplane over the last couple of days and, you know, makes for great, you know, seat talk, if you will.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm looking at the map now. I see. I just remember that we, like, Playa del Carmen was where I was, just south of Cancun or right next to Cancun.
Yeah.
And I thought people took a trip over to Grand Cayman. Maybe that's why, and maybe they did.
Yeah. There's Cozumel. That's an island off of Mexico.
You know what? I bet you that was, there's Cozumel. That had to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all about scuba diving.
Yeah, that's where
I didn't go on it. I stand corrected. I sit corrected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, but it was good. You know, it's like, it's one thing that kind of shocked me or hit me throughout all this is that, you know, we landed in major metropolitan cities. General aviation wasn't that much different, you know, out there. You know, as far as seeing a Cirrus, nobody had really seen Cirruses.
Really?
Floating around. So every, like airliners, there was a KLM in Guayaquil, Ecuador. An airliner got on the radio and said, hey, you know, this is KLM and behind, you know, in front of you, like, there's a 777. They're like, what kind of plane is that? Like, it's a Cirrus. They're like, cool, we'd like a ride. And I'm like, I'd like a ride in yours.
Yeah, you know? Can you want to change for a leg?
Yeah, you want to change? And all that. So that was pretty cool, you know. You show up everywhere, and, you know, Cirruses here in the United States are
very prevalent.
Very prevalent. Everybody knows what they are.
Prevalent. Prevalent.
But when you start getting anywhere south of, like, Grand Cayman, they're, you know, they're
all those new owners that bought two of them are pretty proud, I bet.
Yeah, they really are. They're very proud. So that's
cool. So what of all of the entire trip, is there one major positive that kind of moment that sticks in your mind, and on the opposite side of the coin, one where you think that was the only downer, or that was a downer?
The positive was how easy it is for you to do that. You know, flying the airplane is, it's no different anywhere else, you know. And it's like, okay, you see a mountain, you could be in the Rocky Mountains, you could be in the Andes, you could be, you know, wherever, you know. And, you know, it's really basically breaking it down into 4-hour legs, you know.
Right.
A 4-hour leg is not that big of a deal. You're just doing multiple legs over.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I think it's more in your head, the coolness of it. I forgot to ask. You know, they say you go south of the equator and the toilets flush backwards.
Yes, they do. That was my first time crossing the equator. And I'm like, I have to try it. And then I flush the toilet, and sure enough.
So what do you do if you've got a toilet on the equator? Like the water just kind of sloshes back and forth and doesn't know which way to go?
Straight down. You know, what's funny is I got to, when I got to Santiago, all these pilots, you know, that I was hanging out with, down there, they started making all these equator jokes, and it's like,
you know. Sunday night chuckle now becomes equator's chuckle.
Exactly. They're like, what's the difference, you know, why do, polar bears go hungry? You know, why can't a polar bear in Antarctica eat a penguin? I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I've got no clues. Like, well, because penguins live in the North Pole.
It's not even funny.
Yeah, no, he's just like doing that, and then he's like, okay.
It's more of a brain teaser than a joke.
Yeah, exactly. So then the guy, the same guy goes on, and he's like, what about so in the North American Chicago, the water turns counterclockwise as it goes down the drain. Down here in Santiago, it goes clockwise, to the right. But what happens on the equator? I'm just like, I don't know. And he's like, it just goes straight down. I'm like, duh.
When I turn on my faucet, it goes straight down, right? Not toilet bowls now, my sink, right? So I don't understand why the water spins. It's because it, I gotta see this, right? I'm gonna go on YouTube and see the thing. So what happened to you? That's the other question. You're flying and you cross the equator. Did anything happen to your instrumentation?
Yeah, well, I got a little video of crossing the equator, and shortly thereafter, we crossed the guy that I was flying with, he radioed to me. He was like, hey, Al, I'm having a problem with both of my AHARs. And I'm like, really? And he said, and all of a sudden, I started to have a problem with both of mine. So we had four AHARs and two separate airplanes go kind of haywire.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to try this. Hey, it's going counterclockwise.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you had lost your AHARs. Was that coincidence, or was that absolutely due to crossing the equator? It had to be. It couldn't be coincidence times four, right? What did Sarah say?
It was definitely an equator issue.
Wow.
And they're still kind of researching what was going on, but I think it was a magnetometer and magnetometer issue within the AHAR system and a software glitch. And actually, they got Garmin involved, and they were kind of...
That's not the first time they've ever crossed the equator. They probably should have known.
No, they haven't. So when we landed in Chile, one of the guys came up to me. He's like, hey, do you have a... what's going on with your AHARs? He's like, I had the same problem on an airplane that was delivered with a Garmin G1000 about a month ago. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. So this is not uncommon.
Wow.
As you're across and all that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And could you see the little line for the equator? Did they have like sheets in the ocean that were tied together?
It was funny. The guy, so on that leg, I was in front. I was leading the pack down to Ecuador. The guy behind me is like, he says on the radio, he's like, check your lat long. We're approaching the equator.
How cool. See, to me, I get really excited about
stuff
like that.
I was kind of like, I was enjoying it. I was like, I remember as we were flying around and, in the North Pacific or like Colombian airspace, I had a pinch me moment where I was just like, look at this. Like, you don't even realize where you're at. It's like you're just having a PBJ flying a plane and then you like pull up for flight. I mean, not even on your Garmin, on the perspective, because it's just like a two-dimensional thing. So I pulled it up on for flight. The GPS works under the world map, and so then you like zoom out. So then you see like the really the curvature of the earth and stuff on the world map. And then there you are, just a little dot in the North Pacific, And it's like, wow, okay. Now this is where I'm having a peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
I'm looking now. I see US. I don't have, world map. There it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so freaking cool.
My mom asked, what was my favorite meal on the trip?
What was your favorite meal? Peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, actually, that was a nice meal because there was you never left the airport, so you didn't have any time to eat. So if you didn't have breakfast, you wouldn't be eating until dinner, there's no food at these airports you landed at or anything like that. We ended up going, out in Chile, which was a really great, there's a great restaurant. I don't even remember the name. But really fresh fish, really nice place. I had sea bass cheeks, and like garlic and butter. And, oh, it was just really delicious.
Boy, I'm just looking at this map of, you know, at the world map.
Yeah.
And there's the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah.
That would have been, I mean, that's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
That one would be a little scary.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have an airport.
Awesome.
So cool. All right. Well, so that was amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, and do you have pictures people can kind of go online and see? Or?
Yeah. I'll try to put some more tweets out there throughout the course of the week.
Yeah. Has anyone got any questions? Tweets usually come more to you than they do to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. So we'll,
No, why are there others? Questions?
Are there questions? I don't know. You'll have to ask the listeners.
I did ask the listeners and they're not responding to me.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's all right. The show must go on.
The show must go on.
Yeah, exactly. So would you want to take a trip like this?
Yes. I absolutely would. I mentioned here I got a little bored after a 2.5 hour flight or whatever it was to Kansas City, but especially VFR, if I can see the world below me, it's just so cool, right? So I would like to do maybe just to Key West first.
Yeah.
But, and because 26 hours seems like a long time, but especially if I could have somebody else in the airplane.
Yeah.
I don't listen to that much music. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'd get a book on tape before I'd listen
to
it.
Hey, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I downloaded a few movies on my iPad.
Okay. There you go.
And I had a little mount for it and, you're just sitting there like over the water.
Here I am talking about the beautiful earth below you and what a visual. And you say, oh, really? I was just watching, you know, Debbie Does Dallas the whole way there.
If you could find that on iTunes, I'd download it.
Yeah, that was the movie back when I was young.
Nice.
That one is out. That one, Deep Throat, and
look,
there's fireworks right over here. Right,
wow, that's cool.
Nice. Yeah, I mean it's going. It's not the 4th of July. What's going on? Look at that. Keeps going.
I don't know. It's cool.
It is cool.
Awesome.
Awesome. So anyway. It's just like a regular guest. 9:30, time to transition maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so very cool. I'm going to look at some pictures. I hope you took a lot of them and you'll post some and we can all feel like we are part of it.
Yeah, thank you. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks for being here. And normally our guests give us a $5,000 stipend for making them popular.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Does this mean I'll become popular?
So now, no, you never will become popular.
I knew it.
So now what? Now we look at this week. I mean, is everything, all your GA flying a downer since then?
No, you know what? Actually, I think it's enhanced it. From an instructional standpoint, it's something cool to bring back and all that. There's some people that have reached out and, you and I had went to the Cavalcade of Airplanes.
Yep.
Right at the Clyde International Airport in Bolingbrook.
001
Charlie 5.
1 Charlie 5, thank you.
And there's cool. There's a guy that flies internationally. He came up to me. He flies I think it was 767 for a major carrier here. And it was cool. So he said, hey, I was around a Cirrus SR22 Turbo, and he was asking me about the airplane. And I said, hey, this is a great airplane. I just flew one of these to Chile. He's like, no kidding. You know, and it's cool. Here's a guy that has way more experience than, probably I'll ever have. And, hasn't had the clue, and to be able to capture the excitement of, from somebody that's, I'll be honest, maybe a little down on airplanes and flying and things like that.
Yeah, we see it a lot.
Yeah, just to be really like enthused about it. It was pretty cool.
Well, it's just not something you hear or see every day, right? It's a long way, small airplane, 4 seats, very comfortable airplane, but 26 and a half hours by yourself in an airplane.
Yeah.
Oi.
Yeah, right.
That's where oi comes from.
Right.
Yeah, but so no, that's cool. I would love to take longer trips. I'm mad at myself. When my son lived in Montana, I kept on saying I'm going to fly out to Montana.
Lived in Montana?
Yeah, he was a sportscaster in Helena, Montana.
That's cool.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah. So I used to actually, my one mountain flying course is I flew from Chicago to Great Falls, and then I called a guy at in Helena, an instructor, a flight school, and I said, look, if you guys will come pick me up and give me a lesson, we'll fly from Great Falls down to Helena.
Nice.
In a 172. And it was very cool. I mean, yeah. There was a thunderstorm below us.
Oh, cool.
And he had wanted to take me at a lot of different grass strips and you know,
yeah.
The mountain flying type stuff you see.
Right.
And because of the storms, we couldn't. I was very uncomfortable because I would gain and lose altitude. I couldn't help it. I'd get updrafts and downdrafts.
Right.
And then to see the thunderstorms below me and lightning, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I just, but I'd made one of the best landings of my life when I got back to Helena. And it was very turbulent, but as soon as we got over the ridges and stuff, it just smoothed out like glass.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Actually, you ever heard of Sparky Inman?
No.
So if you read any of the mountain flying books, they're all written by Sparky Inman.
Really?
And I remember this was a few years back. If I had waited 1 week, I was going to go to a mountain flying class that he was giving there.
Really?
That by the Montana Department of Transportation.
Oh, that would have been cool.
And he got caught and crashed his airplane and kind of messed him up.
Oh, man.
You know, and I keep thinking I could have been with him. And then it was either a year or two later, did the same thing, only it killed him.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
No, no. Just go check mountain flying. Any of the books, like from Sporties, you'll see that the kind of the expert is a guy named Sparky Inman. And I was a week away from kind of flying with him. I just got there the long weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'd love to get more comfortable with mountain flying and doing that.
Oh, totally. I think that'd be really cool. Yeah. That is a running joke amongst my group of friends. So we went...
Aren't I part of that group? Evidently not. Ladies and gentlemen, it's so nice to know.
You are the running joke with the Sunday night chuckle.
Yeah. Nice dismount. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, there's a... but you know what's cool is that a bunch of my college friends, you know, we've got this little running joke that anytime one of... you know, this group of, you know, somebody in this group of friends gets married or engaged or something like that, the bachelor party is to go flying somewhere. So we went in October, got our seaplane ratings.
I remember that.
For a bachelor party. And then, the next time the next person that gets engaged is going to, the party will be a bush flying course in Alaska.
Actually, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
So what's going to be your next rating?
I think I'm going to be from our show last fall.
Yeah.
I want to get my glider.
Your glider. That's your next rating.
I've never been in a glider other than the Sky Arrow, which really isn't a glider.
Right.
I would love to experience that, and I think we ought to do that, and I want to get my seaplane. If it weren't for money, I'd love to get the helicopter rating, but glider's next. How about you?
That's a good question. I would love to do, well, the glider, I don't know, or maybe a multi, single engine ATP.
Boring.
Why?
I'd like to get my multi, but I can't afford, I don't have access to a multi to stay proficient. To me, it seems like a waste of money.
Yeah.
I want to get my commercial. I keep talking about it, see, almost a year, and I still haven't gotten it after I say, yeah, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, so when are you going to get your commercial?
I don't know. I guess I need to find a retract complex airplane first.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. You know, and I know I've disappointed a lot of people. But, I think the glider, because the glider's cheap.
Yeah, right.
You know, matter of fact, I've got this thing for an organization out west. I was talking to someone. I said, look, you just join for the day, $125, and you basically fly all day. And the guy I talked to, he says, I've been out there. They never charge me. I go out there and fly for free.
Wow. Because
they just want to help. There's people that do give you a tow. Maybe you could toss them $25 for a tow.
Right.
And everything else is free.
It's awesome.
I'm doing it, man.
Yeah, totally.
Would you do it? Have you flown a glider?
Yeah, I'm two flights away from my glider rating.
What do you mean two flights? It's by...
You measure things in flights. It really...
Does it really?
Yeah.
It's not like just do the PTS in 20 hours or anything?
Yeah, it's like 20 flights or, you know, a certain number of flights. I mean, I think that's an hour.
Why wouldn't you finish? You're so close.
Yeah, I should. I did it all in college, and then I just stopped.
That was silly.
It was.
Notice how I said silly and not stupid.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So what are you doing this week?
Well, we're getting back in the King Air.
Again, you've probably forgotten how to fly it.
Yep, probably have and all that. Today, I got some great news.
Talk to me. What happened today?
A student of mine passed his private pilot check ride.
Congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Well, congratulations as a student. I mean, that's really exciting.
Well, maybe it's
him.
Thank you to you and congratulations to him.
Yeah, well,
thank you for your investment of time and all that, and congratulations to him for being successful
doing it.
Well, we had at our club a gentleman that kind of got in and out of flying.
Yeah.
And finally, he bought his own airplane, a beautiful 2010 Archer with Garmin 500. And he says, I know I'm going to take a long time. You know, he's got a lot of stuff going on at work and all that. And he soloed yesterday.
Yeah.
That was so exciting.
Where's the applause?
Right there.
Yeah. It's a golf clap.
Yeah, I'm looking for... Yeah. Is that better?
That's a Clark W. Griswold one.
Yeah, you don't want one of these, though.
No, I actually do have to go to the bathroom. I had too many Arnold Palmers at lunch or dinner.
Yeah, I noticed you had a couple of those. You know what? I have so many sweets that it is. I got to stick with water.
Yeah.
So you're going to King Air. Where are you heading?
Back out east to Philadelphia. And so that's going to be nice. And it'd be nice to get back in the King Air, get on the road again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to we're going to do a flyout midweek. I'm obviously not going to have you along if you're out all this week.
Where are you going?
I don't know. I just know it's being organized. Oh, you know what? We're going to lunch in Milwaukee during the weekday.
Nice.
Yeah, I play a little hooky, I guess.
Awesome. Who's organizing it?
Freddie Liu.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah, he wants to Wednesday. I'm out. Actually, now don't tell anyone. This is a secret. But I have a business trip on Tuesday. I have a meeting from 11 to 12 in Detroit. Or wait a minute. I got to make sure I don't mess up this time zone change. I have a one-hour meeting in Detroit. And there's no way I want to drive for a one-hour meeting.
Oh.
So I'm going to fly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you should fly. That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm going to take the Cirrus, which needs a new alternator too. But I checked my equipment list, and as long as it's VFR, you only need the one alternator.
Nice.
And then the alternator will be put in that night when I get back.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a great use for an airplane.
See, to me, it's perfect. Again, 1 hour, and I don't know if I mentioned it here. My greatest experience was from Chicago going to a meeting in Bloomington, following a meeting in the afternoon in Springfield, and then running over to Quincy, Illinois. It would have taken me probably 3 days on the airlines.
Yeah, right.
And it would have taken me 2 days and a horrible drive in the car.
Right.
And I did it, you know, it was boom, boom, boom. I was all three cities in one day.
No big deal.
NBD, man.
Awesome.
So I wonder how many people that listen to the show, how many of you use your airplane for business? Why don't you tweet us, hashtag SimpleFlight, and let us know where you go using general aviation for business. Or if you don't, tell us why.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that aviation has a pretty big value play in that, and you know, I just wish more companies. I think that if you educate more companies on it, they'd start using it, don't you?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of misnomers and myths about the safety and the risks, and I mean, certainly there is incremental risk, but companies don't like their employees using it.
Yeah. From a liability standpoint.
Yeah, you know, and they don't understand.
Yeah.
Right. You know, or they they don't accurately understand. I mean, certainly they're, no, we, at my last company, you know, it's like, you're doing what? You can't do that. What if, this was the response from the lawyer. What if you fly into a school?
And yeah.
What kind of question is that? What if I drive into a school?
Yeah. Right? True. That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I think aviation has that stigma against it. But, you know, if you end up having a fun way of projecting the value, saying, you know, what if you drive and fly into a school? It's like, okay, what if you drive in the school? But, you know, say, hey, what if I close 3 deals in a day as opposed to 1?
Well, but general counsel isn't thinking like that.
Right.
You know, and again, I understand it, and there is a liability, and so, you know, my rule at my last company, because we had an underground of GA pilots, that even the company said, you can't do this, we all did it.
Right.
Right, but on business trips and things like that, I would never take in another employee, because I saw what could happen with, we had a 421 go down, guy was in his plane and taking some business associates, and the lawsuits were amazingly big.
Right.
So I just always fly by myself. I try to keep it in decent weather or light IFR, to manage the risk more, so I'm not putting someone in there. And I say it's on me. You know, I'm personally traveling.
Right.
And then when I get there, if I choose to do business, so be it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. No, that's great. Well, hey, we have, I'm going to throw it out there. So next week you're going to be out in Iowa City, right?
No, I'm going to be here, but, I'm going to be at my house with my, actually, oh, I could maybe even do it, but my son, daughter-in-law, who is pregnant again, and my granddaughter. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in need of a co-host next week, if Mark will throw that out there. Mark will be conducting interviews.
That's right. Well, actually, we got one from, Midwest Flight Lines was here last week.
Yeah.
And he said, I already had my chance.
Yeah.
Oh, what kind of airplane is that?
Squirrel.
Squirrel, sorry. We got a, it's hard to see because it's night and he's turned off all his lights. Is that a G? A Gulfstream?
Yeah, that's a, Challenger 300.
That's a Challenger 300.
We just got a, tweet and it says, as you know, I fly for business because it combines business and pleasure. It is quicker and more reliable than the airlines.
Absolutely. And how do you get away with doing that? Oh, it's a beautiful airplane.
That
Squirrel.
Is. Yeah, right. No, I think what was that? What'd you say?
You know, my last company, they were, you can't do it. So obviously this person's company says, and it's okay. I'm wondering why they get to go get away with it when I can't.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's a pretty big legal battle, but you know, there's a lot of people that, let's say, you know, if you work for a big corporate company, it might not work that way, but you know, if you own your own company or whatnot, you know, that's something that, you know, you have the power of making that decision, right?
Yeah. And we see, you know, a lot of people do it. You know, Al in our club was going to be doing it. He owns his company. We have a lawyer that has worked it out with his firm that he can do it.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot of value in there. It's just got to be poised the right way. Yes, you have to have the right amount of say power, if you will.
Influence, power, whatever.
Right, exactly, yeah. to get that approved. But, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, you know, to me, you said that, I don't know if it was on the radio, but we talked about the use of it even in personal. I applaud everyone that gets in an airplane because they're living the dream, whether it's for a $100 hamburger or a skyline tour or just sightseeing.
Right.
But, you know, we talked last week. It is so cool to use it for family stuff if you're into that like I am.
Right. Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I only fly an hour and I get to take my kid, my oldest, to lunch.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
And he gets to get rid of me an hour later, which is really cool for him.
Exactly. Oh, that's awesome. I think that's such a cool way of doing it. I've got to go to, like rural Virginia, and at the end of the month for a wedding. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, I'm looking at Google Maps and I'm seeing, man, this thing is, this place is far away. It's like a 700 mile drive or 600 mile drive.
You know, aye, that sounds horrible.
Oh, it sounds really ridiculous. And, you know, there's an airport right nearby, and I'm thinking, I'm like, hey, you know, even if it's in a 172, I just have to fly there. And,
yeah.
And all that, you know, to be able to do that. But fortunately, it's cheaper to drive.
Is it? We always talk about the value of your time and all of that. And
well, I'm renting an airplane, and, you know, so I have a, yeah, so my time isn't worth a lot at the moment, I guess.
But you're not going alone, are you?
No, I'm going to be driving by myself and all.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Maybe you can get other people to chip in and pick them up on the way.
Yeah, I've tried.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. They said no.
All right, so let Al know if you want to go to a wedding in Virginia. Do you have to sneak? You have to be a crasher because these people don't know you, but he wants to split the flight. We got to get three people into a 182 or a Dakota.
Yeah.
Three, four people.
Do it.
Divided by four. Camping, well, it'll be cheap.
Come back. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that, but I'm trying to work something out.
You know, I'm changing the subject on you, but I was talking to someone. They said, hey, yesterday was the last day for discounted Oshkosh tickets.
Really?
I forgot to buy my tickets last night.
How do you feel about that?
I feel like I've wasted opportunity. Are you going this year?
Well, I'm planning on going, maybe not for the entire length of the show.
I only
show.
Go for a day. I might go for 2 days this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we should plan that out. Matter of fact, we've been invited, I think. Matter of fact, we will do our show from there, even if it's pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No, we're going to do that. We have to pick a place. Maybe we'll go back to the Oshkosh Hilton that gave us the room that time we rented.
Absolutely. Be like, hey, can we use your facility for free? And they'd be like, you know what time of year it is, don't
you?
Yeah,
really.
Right. Yep. Yep, we do. We do.
Yeah, well, they'll give it to us because they liked our free advertisements for them. They exchange for a room.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll come up with something.
Right.
So what I haven't done in a couple years, and I used to do it all the time, was the pancake breakfast. What's wrong with me? We got to get, let's do that. I'm busy this next weekend, but the following weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
That's not the 4th, is it? No.
Right. 4th of July.
What's your favorite? When you want to go to a pancake, you know, fly-in, what are you looking for? How do you
pancakes
know it's a good one?
Pancakes with M&Ms in it.
Oh, yeah. Have you been to the one in Bigfoot, Big Moose? I don't know, Moose. It's just across the border.
Oh, Bigfoot 7 Victor 9?
I think that's it. It had a great, great fly-in. Grass strip and the clowns that paint your faces and...
No, I've heard about it though. That's a pretty good
one.
Oh,
we gotta
go.
We'll take the Sky Arrow. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matter of fact, that's where the Sky Arrow is really gonna do well. I wanna start going to a bunch of grass strips with the Sky Arrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Go up to Dacey. Or, you know what? Actually, there's a lot of airports around the area that have grass strips. I never realized that. I started paying attention. I'm like, oh, I gotta go to Burlington and do soft field landings there. Oh, I gotta go to, Poplar Grove and do soft field landings there.
Gotta go to
East Troy.
Dacey.
Dacey. Yeah, there's tons of
them. And you know
there.
What's good about Dacey?
What?
Are you serious?
Oh, the corn.
Corn.
Yeah.
See, everyone,
or
if you have
Timmerman. And controlled grass strip.
I didn't know they had grass there.
Yeah, they've got two crossing grass strip runways in their control tower.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I want people should look. If you haven't heard of Mirai Corn, let's see how you say M-E-R-I-E or something like that, R-E-I or something. It is the best corn in the world. It's in Harvard, Illinois. They have a grass strip, Dacey. We make an annual trip there and we load up bushels of corn into the back of the plane and bring it back for everyone. And this stuff, it's sweet corn.
Yeah.
And he, what do they call it? Not crossbreed, hybrid corn or whatever.
Right.
He puts three different sweet corn kernels, whatever they call it, together.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you walk up to this place, he gives you a stalk of corn, you peel it back, you don't cook it, you just start eating it. It is so good. Then you, if for the other ones you bring home, put it on the grill,
I give it to all my neighbors, and they absolutely love it. Every time it gets to August, end of July, hey, you going to bring that corn over?
Wow.
It's just people rave about it. So me, right, corn.
I've been there. I've taught people how to done a soft field landing refresher course.
Yeah, and they got three grass runways there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's at Twin
grass
Garden
taxiways.
And grass taxiways between the corn there. Twin Garden Farms is the website, and they're probably a mile or so away, and they'll drive out to the airport and bring you your corn. And with us, he's thrown in a free watermelon or two, which
wow.
is pretty heavy. And we give his son rides. Actually, his son is probably taking lessons by now. It's been so many years. He's old enough.
Really?
Yeah. It's just really cool. So, yeah, Twin Garden Farms, I recommend them. And you'll get on their Facebook page when you do it because they love pilots that fly in.
That's
and
awesome.
It's in western Illinois, north, very north, though.
Well, you know, I'm going to do that then.
It's not western Illinois. Why did I say that? It's west of Chicago.
It's sort of western Illinois.
Yeah,
it's west
not
of
real.
Here.
It's west of here.
This is the center of the universe.
Yes, it is. COTU.
Well, hey, yeah, exactly. Anyway, we have a show coming up where we need, Mark is going to be doing some family stuff and get a co-host in.
And maybe I'll pre-record my,
Your joke
by Sunday Night Chuckle. Pre-record some other things.
Be fabulous.
Yeah.
And then, we'll have a great time.
The other thing that I'm a little disappointed, our listenership, we sent out a note. Al and I want to make the show better than ever and a little bit different. And yeah, we could go out and hire marketing consultants of that, but we want to know what you want to hear from us.
Right.
You know, we have a format that seems to work, but we think it can be better. And what is this show missing? And don't say talent or funny jokes. But if you were running this or it was something that you think other people would listen to, what would you do to change the show from a format perspective? We're very interested to hear what you have to say and help build the next great radio show, next great Simple Flight radio show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That would be good.
We love it. We want to hear it. Yeah.
So anyway, it's getting to be that time, young man.
Right.
You know, I questioned whether we could talk about one Cirrus trip over a two-hour period or with an hour of talking about it, but we did.
We nailed it.
I don't know if we nailed it, but I was certainly excited and interested about it.
Yeah.
It's something I think that we all have to find new ways not only of doing radio shows, but new ways of spending our time in the airplane.
Right.
And just like we talked at the beginning of the show about too social, too flying, we all need to fly more because it's good for GA. It's good for all of us because we love it so much. And just find new ways of doing it. Maybe Cirrus will hire you and fly a plane down to Chile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe not.
Maybe it'll be Italy. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be good. Okay. So let's say someone came to you tomorrow and said, I'm going to pay for your trip anywhere. It has to be relatively close, but I want you to do something in a general aviation airplane. Go on a destination. It's not something that you get to do every day, but that would be very enjoyable for you. What would it be?
To go on just any trip?
Yeah, again, not a week-long trip and stuff. Just like picture someone that's got a Saturday free and they want to go flying. They're tired of the $100 hamburger, that type of thing. What would you suggest are some options that you think would be cool?
Fly to the Paso Islands just north of Wisconsin on Lake Superior.
You know what? That sounds good.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm thinking because there's a lot of little island airports, Put-in Bay and all that, and I've never done any of them.
Yeah. Last weekend, a student and friend of mine, we flew up to, Grand Marias, California. Grand Marias,
is that Mexico?
No, Minnesota. it's at the very tip of the anvil in Minnesota. And, on the way we stopped at the Apostle Islands, which I had no clue even existed. And a beautiful place. It's kind of walk into town, grab a hamburger type of place, and, you land at an island.
I want to do that. How far is it?
It's just on the it's like almost up to Duluth.
Oh, okay. So it's not around the corner.
I mean, it's 2 hours.
So kind of like Kansas City.
Yeah, right.
All right.
What would you do?
Well, you know, you've already heard that I love going to visit family.
Right.
I love just doing anything in an airplane, but I want to try new airports. And you've given me the vision, if you will, the dream.
Yeah.
I want to go to that one. I want to go to Put-in Bay. I've flown with someone going to Mackinac or Mackinac.
Right.
I want to do that stuff on my own and put it in the logbook.
Yeah.
Just add to my flying experience, because while it's all so cool, it's neat when you do new things.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
What's the clock say? 2200. I hate that.
Yeah. Oh, it's really, really bad. But anyway, we have, thanks for listening to my spiel tonight.
Yeah, well, thanks for being on the show. It's not often we get to interview ourselves, but again, it's just something that I suspect 95% of the people, if not more, that listened in tonight will never get a chance to. And so maybe through what you described, they kind of can visualize and feel like what it'd be like to fly 26 and a half hours to another country south of the equator, all the different things you dealt with. That's just so cool.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet.
Well, anyway. Well, we're going to miss you next week.
Thank you. I mean, like I say, I'll pre-record a few things and,
appreciate it.
Yeah. And I'll listen in the background while I'm with my granddaughter.
All right. That sounds good.
All right, buddy. Well, have a great, great week.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. We're going to have a little training session and celebratory, solo slash private license for cake and pizza.
Yeah.
Tomorrow
you got
night.
It. Why not?
So I'll see you tomorrow, and then, both you and I are traveling Tuesday on.
You got it.
All right, buddy. Blue skies to you.
And strong tailwinds.
To all of our listeners as well. Have a good week, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.